live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Huge, huge football game Saturday, Autzen Stadium. Oregon, Ohio State. We got some Ohio State fans in the house here at the Independent Sports Bar. Be curious to see how their weekend unfolds. Our next guest, formerly of the Associated Press, now with The Athletic, Ralph Russo. He's a diehard Mets fan, and he's here to talk about Ohio State and Oregon. Ralph Russo joining us. Let's talk about the Mets first. How are you feeling?
Can I share something with you, John?
Yeah, share.
So when they started turning it around this season, I wasn't watching. Like, I had sort of bailed a little bit, and because I didn't have them on my YouTube, because I didn't have their regional sports thing on their network on my YouTube TV.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I convinced myself that not watching was part of the reason why they are winning.
I swear
to God, I have seen so little of the last week of like live action, and I've tried hard to actually avoid it, to the point where my wife earlier this week, when they were playing the Brewers and she wanted to watch, she was like, "Are you rational?" And I said, "No, of course not. I'm not rational about this." And here's the reason why I finally decided, like, I have to stay away. I sat down to watch game two or three of the Brewers. She would made me watch it, and as soon as I sat down, the Brewers hit back-to-back home runs. I'm like, I'm turning this off.
You got to get out.
And, it's been a weird run. Like, consuming it this way through text messages from my family and the highlights afterward, it's been real weird, but I feel like I'm dedicated now. I'm dedicated to, like, depriving myself so they keep winning.
I'm glad to hear you talk like this, because I always say to fans, it doesn't matter where you sit on the sofa. It doesn't matter if you're wearing your lucky shirt. The team doesn't know you're out there, but it's nice to know that even sports writers are not immune to the superstitions of sports. Where does your love affair with the Mets begin, and how deep does it run?
It runs really deep. It's like it's the team that I love the most, and it comes from Dad. You know, I grew up in Queens, and my father was an old-time New York Giants fan. When they left to the West Coast, he certainly wasn't going to root for the Yankees. That wouldn't be allowed. So when the Mets started, he rooted for the Mets. When I was 8 or 9 years old enough to know the difference, he turned the TV on. Here's the Mets. These are the good guys. Here's the Yankees. These are the bad guys. That's the way it is in this house. And it's been that way ever since.
Ralph Russo with us of The Athletic now. You made the move from AP to The Athletic. I'm glad to see you there. I think it's going to be fun to see what you do with it. You know, in the last week, we've had Vanderbilt upset Alabama. You jumped all over that. Now you're on this Oregon-Ohio State game. And give us what it's been like in the last week, especially with college football and, you know, the top of college football not looking like it has a team that will run away with it this year.
Yeah, well, first of all, the job change, I do not recommend when you're a college football writer changing jobs in the middle of the season.
Right.
It's great. I'm humbled by the opportunity, and I was honored for 30 years to work for the Associated Press. They literally gave me a life, right? They gave me a job, and they gave me a career, and the career has almost in many ways defined my life. So I've got a lot of great memories there. The transition is just weird, because when you move in the middle of the season, you're constantly feeling like you're playing catch up, right? And especially my first weekend is the craziest weekend of the season so far, when you have 5 top 10 teams lose. And now I'm here in Oregon, like, getting ready to cover the Big Ten game of the year, what promises to be the Big Ten game of the year with Oregon and Ohio State. So it definitely, my head's spinning a little bit, but the job is mostly the same. I'm covering college football on a national level.
I'm looking at Oregon, and I think there is a question for Dan Lanning if he loses this game about big games, because he, you know, hasn't done well in games against Washington, conference championship game. He lost to Oregon State 2 seasons ago in a big game. You know, he just hasn't, his team has not performed well in these games. But trying to figure out with the expanded playoff, Ralph, what it means. What are the stakes on Saturday in your mind?
Yeah, so it's funny. With the expanded playoff, I almost feel like we've gone two ways with this. On one hand, it absolutely does lower the stakes. Now, I would also say that, like, plenty of teams made the playoff after losing one game anyway, right? We hadn't had any two-loss playoff teams, but we had already moved into a world where one loss did not eliminate you. So even in a four-team system, this was not an elimination game. But there's certainly a lot more leeway there. You're talking about a game. Well, listen, actually, you know, in some ways, it still is a pretty big deal. You're talking about a game that could be for seeding, for a home game, for a bye, and things along those lines. I know that's very NFL way of looking at it, but there is that. The other thing I'd say, John, is I've had this conversation with a couple of my colleagues of, like, I feel like in some ways the college football has been so focused on what everything means to the postseason. Having a bigger postseason and understanding that there's a good chance both of these teams could get in anyway, in some ways allows you to maybe live in the moment a little more. Like, I don't think Georgia-Alabama was any less exciting because of the fact that maybe they both get in, and we saw what happened last week with all those upsets. So I feel like, to a certain degree, what I would tell some fans who are worried about the stakes being lowered is kind of just enjoy what we have Saturday, which is a top five matchup and an amazing place to play. And let's see what happens after that, right?
Ralph Russo with us of The Athletic. He'll be at Autzen Stadium for Oregon-Ohio State on Saturday. Ralph, you've been working on a Chip Kelly piece. What can you tell us about sort of the angle of that piece and Chip Kelly's fingerprints on this game?
Yeah, so hopefully that will publish either later tonight or tomorrow morning. And so if you want to find, I'll be tweeting it out. And Ralph D. Russo, ATH. It used to be Ralph D. Russo AP for a long time.
Yeah,
so
threw me. That threw me the other day. Yeah,
it's throwing me too. So the concept was, it's sort of twofold. It's this idea of, you know, Chip has now been gone three times as long as he was here as head coach. And twice as long as he was here in total. Can you even have a legacy when you were here that long? I wanted to explore the fact that, like, yeah, like, he still has an enormous impact on where Oregon is, even though we're so far removed from this being Chip Kelly's Oregon. And in some ways, you know, there was probably a shelf life on what Chip was doing and his success. But because he left when he did, it never expired, right? There's no Oregon fans got the best of it and can all look back on Chip's time with nothing but fondness because it was great and it never took a turn away. And I don't know if it would have. Like, I don't know if he would have stayed longer. And maybe that's a ridiculous question, that hypothetical, because he never was going to stay longer. But it was such a moment in time. And what Oregon needed to continue its evolution is what it has to a certain degree now and what it had under Mario, which is essentially, hey, you can't trick anybody anymore. This is not about innovation. You can, because everybody stole Chip's stuff. Everybody stole his secrets and started using them. Now you just got to go get the best players. And to a certain degree, that's where Oregon cutting edge is, right? It's Division Street and it's being super invested in recruiting. And now on Saturday, they're going to try to beat Ohio State at their own game, right? They're not fooling anybody with up tempo. They're not trying to be different. They're trying to be Ohio State, and that probably wouldn't have happened without Chip. So that was the next evolution there. So it's just an interesting dichotomy of, like, he's such an enormous impact in the fact that he sort of taught the program that we could, you know, pursue national championships. But in many ways, it was, again, sort of a place in time. And I don't know if they would have got to where they are now if he had stayed.
I'm looking at Tosh Lapoy, Oregon's D coordinator, Chip Kelly as the play caller. And I'm going, that's a mismatch. Like, Chip Kelly is a master chess player. I'm trying to figure out how Oregon overcomes that. That said, I think Autzen Stadium may be part of the answer. You know, how do you see this matchup, Ralph, and you know, through that prism maybe?
Yeah, so when I have looked at that, that matchup has drawn my attention a lot. And it goes back to what you said about landing in big games. It's interesting, John, like, you know, I nobody I would trust more to talk about Oregon football than you. And as I was thinking about what I might be writing this weekend, as you try to anticipate storylines, one of them was like, Lanning, big games. He's only been here 2.5 years. Can you really, not even 2.5, can you really say he can't win the big one? But when I see the failings in those big games, it's been on the defensive side. The defensive coach, Dan Lanning, handing it off to Tosh Lupoi, and I'm sure Lanning has a lot of say in how that defense is run. But, I often find myself watching Oregon in the biggest games thinking they look sloppy on defense, and I like you, look at that chip matchup and think, I'm giving that advantage, that chess match advantage, to Ohio State, and not just because Ohio State has great players.
Boise State took Oregon to the wire at Autzen Stadium, and it was a great game, and Oregon found a way to win. I keep thinking, Ralph, that win looks better and better. Ohio State and Oregon, I'm looking at them both going, gosh, I don't know if they're really, really good or just good or great. Do you have a sense on these two teams right now? Is Ohio State a great team? Are they a national title contender? Is Oregon a contender? Or are they just playoff teams that will maybe bounce around the playoff?
I think we'll get we're talking about like sort of living in the moment. I think we'll get a good snapshot of that, obviously, this weekend. I think Ohio State so far has been as advertised. And, yes, I think the competition has been their non-conference schedule was really a dud this year. And, Iowa, Michigan State, we're not getting a lot out of that. The Iowa's defense is the best thing that Ohio State has faced so far. But my point is they haven't missed a beat, right? They have not been tested. They have looked the part against the opponents, whereas at least with Oregon, first week against Idaho, that was weird. I know Genty's great, but, boy, I kind of wish he would have had a little better, easier time against Boise State. So a little bit – it looks like Oregon has sort of fixed that offensive line issues. I lean more towards, I think Ohio State is more of the given here. Let's put it this way. If Oregon wins this weekend, I think it might say more about Oregon than it would say about whatever Ohio State doesn't have. I think Ohio State is one of the two or three best teams in the country, almost regardless of what happens this weekend. Maybe if Oregon blows them out, I'll change my mind.
Ralph Russo with us of The Athletic. He's got a piece on Chip Kelly coming down the pipeline. You should check that out. He is on Twitter. You can follow him there or read him at The Athletic. Ralph, SEC and Big Ten, I know they met. There's a lot of secrecy about what are they up to. What do you think they're up to? What are they doing?
Well, I think they're trying to chart a course here as well as they can without getting too without getting sued on one hand, first and foremost. You got to remember, they can't make too many of the rules together. All of a sudden, then they become the targets of antitrust lawsuits. So when they start talking about things like revenue sharing and topics along those lines, it becomes a little testy. I mean, I think what they're ultimately trying to do is figure out ways. I wonder, there's been a lot of talk about super leagues lately and private equity coming in. And what I wrote earlier in the week was, I think eventually the structure of college football is probably heading for something that looks like a super league. My big question is, who will be in charge? And I think if you listen to, and I had some colleagues there tweeting, some things that came out of Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti's mouths today, what they're saying is, we're not giving up control. So to a certain degree, I think if you look at the SEC and the Big Ten, maybe their thought is, we are the Super League, right? Like, the Super League is already here, and it's us. So I think what I see out of the Big Ten and SEC is sort of this attempt to remain in control of college football because they have all the power right now. And I think in many ways, those two leagues will determine what the future looks like.
Before I let you go, I'd love to get your take on Gonzaga to the Pac-12, the rebuild of the conference as they're trying to reconstitute and live to play another day. It just looks to me like they're trying to stay within range of the ACC and the Big 12 for whatever comes next. But what do you see as you watch the Pac-12 kind of pick itself up and put itself back together?
Yeah, I think I think it's admirable, and I think the moves have been good, and I think you end up with a pretty respectable looking league. What I think that they have fallen short of is this idea of, we are going to be a best of the rest. We are going to force our way into being the number five league. And if we are good enough, we can, as you said, close the gap to a certain degree on the ACC and the Big 12. The problem is, when you don't get the best of the AAC to jump on board, and now you have to pivot back to, okay, are we going to bring in, you know, Texas State? Are we going to bat, you know, the Gonzaga move's a nice move to help basketball, but this is not about basketball. This is ultimately about football. I do think it's a good move, and I do think the Pac-12 could look like the fifth best conference in a couple of years, but I don't know if that's much different than the way the AAC was the sixth best conference when there was a Power Five, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's still going to be a really big gap. But maybe they are, maybe they're better positioned than they would have been if they would have just merged with the Mountain West. But, you know, I think again, it probably fell a little short of what their ultimate goal was.
I keep looking at Boise State, and I think if I'm the Pac-12, I am pulling for Boise State not just to be the fifth conference champion. I am kind of watching and going, can they slip in front of the Big 12? Can they become the four seed in this playoff? And what would that do to kind of help the perception? If Boise State runs the table, Ralph, do you see them with a close loss at Oregon? Maybe they're watching this Ohio State game with a little extra interest too, but close loss at Oregon, Boise State make a case to be the four seed?
So, it's funny. This has obviously been a talking point this week because a couple of people have brought this up with me. I still think it's a long shot. But that Big 12 right now looks like it could be an absolute meat grinder. You could conceivably see a Big 12 champion, I think, with three, maybe even four losses. Like, I don't think that, I think all those teams look about the same.
Yeah.
My guess is one or two of them will separate, and you'll end up with something that looks more like an 11-2 team, or a 10 and maybe it's a 10-3 team out there that looks pretty solid with a couple of good wins. I am a little skeptical that Boise could manage to do what you're saying, which is be the fourth highest ranked champion. But the fact of the matter is, when I look at it practically, I can't say it's not possible, because again, I can just see a lot of chaos possible in the Big 12, and that I think opens the door for Boise, especially if Oregon is sitting there as the Big 10 champion with, you know, one or zero losses.
Ralph Russo of The Athletic. Ralph, I'll see you in the press box at Autzen Stadium. I appreciate you joining us. Now, how many times have you been out to the state of Oregon? Is this a frequent trip for you, or one of the first times?
The funny thing is, it used to be when Chip and Marcus Mariota were here. It has been a while. Like, it's been, I think the last time I was here was when Marcus was playing quarterback. So yeah, it's been way too long. It's been way, way too long. Part of that is because I haven't been traveling quite as much over the last couple of years. A lot of news organizations, we've cut back a bit. But I love Portland and where I'm staying tonight, and I love Eugene, and I love Autzen, so I'm really excited to be back in the state for covering a huge game.
Ralph Russo of The Athletic, read his piece on Chip Kelly coming down the pipeline. Travel safe. I'll see you at the stadium.
Thanks, John.
All right, there he goes. Good stuff from the national point of view. Dan Lanning will join us in the 4 o'clock hour, Oregon football coach. I am broadcasting today at the Independent Sports Bar, downtown Portland, where they have 24 televisions, and they will be all set, or most of them maybe, because there's some baseball on, most of them set to the Thursday night football game involving the Super Niners playing that team in Seattle that is halfway good. We will see what happens. No, in all seriousness, the Niners are struggling. I'm really curious to see how they perform tonight on the road in Seattle. Our big splash is coming up. Dan Lanning in the 4 o'clock hour. Leave it here.